To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people.
Because history has shown us that courage can be contagious, and hope can take on a life of its own.
I will bring you hope, and I ask only one thing in return.
We move now, together.
Not at all. Hope is not lost today. It is found.
Hope is what keeps you going.
Even if the whole world is telling you to move, it is your duty to plant yourself like a tree, look them in the eye, and say no. You move.
Charete. Sorry, that was my Greek attempt at saying hello, and welcome to episode 9 of the SF in Translation podcast. I am one of your hosts, Rachel Cordasco. This episode will include news and updates from September 1st through September 30th. Before I say anything else, let me welcome my new partner in crime, my new host with the mostest, Daniel Hauser. Welcome, Daniel.
Hi, thank you, Rachel.
We're supposed to banter wittily right now. Do you have anything witty to say?
You've already recruited me both to this podcast and also to build, what else? Transporters that can teleport?
Yeah.
What was the other thing that I'm supposed to be working on?
Replicators.
Replicators, okay. So I'm convinced that bacteria can do anything, and so I'm convinced I can find a teleporting bacteria at the very least.
Sweet!
And then it's just a simple matter of finding out how they do it and, you know, building that up to a larger scale.
That's a story to write. You have to write that story.
I am working on it. I actually really want to do a story on ghost bacteria, because if ghosts exist, then all life, like they talk about ghost dogs and such, so there should be ghost bacteria, which means people should be getting sick and dying from ghost bacterial infections.
Only ghosts are dying from ghost bacteria.
Well, that's possible, too. Ooh, I hadn't even thought about that. Such possibilities.
You're a scientist. You can do this stuff.
Yes. And I love works in translation. I love international fiction, international anything. And so I am so honored that you asked me to come on and join you for this. And it's going to be a lot of fun, I hope.
It's going to be awesome.
I'm going to try to be fun and supportive for you, at least.
You know, I think it's going great so far, unless you, like, start talking smack about Thomas Mann or opera. I'm sure that we'll just keep on going, you know.
Nope, we'll be fine.
Yeah, it'll be fine. So first, so everybody can know who you are, tell us about yourself and the work you do for the SFT website and why you love SFT more than anything besides your family and bacteria, please.
So, yes, as people have probably gathered already, I am a scientist. I'm assistant professor of biology at Canisius College in Buffalo, New York. So I teach microbiology. My research is with bacteria. I teach biochemistry, intro bio. And next semester, I'm actually going to be doing an honors course for the first time on biology and fiction and film. I'd love to do it on just microbiology, but unfortunately, there's just not enough out there with like a lot of meat on it to really discuss, I don't think yet, particularly not for a very broad course. And so for non-majors, I'm excited about doing this because I've always loved sci-fi, fantasy, and translation. I've sort of recently got into. I studied abroad in France and I speak French. And so from being abroad, I got very sort of connected with the international community and interested in what other places had to offer that were kind of difficult to get in the United States. A lot of it started with just trying to track down movies I was interested in seeing and getting frustrated that there were so many great films that just never got released here in the United States. And I was surprised about that. And I guess I was then also surprised, and I shouldn't have been, that so many great pieces of fiction get published that never get translated and never get here. And so I was an easy convert to the cause, as it were. So yeah, some people might know me just because I write book reviews for Skiffy and Fanny. I've done a handful of podcasts with them. I just kind of just started. I never had an introduction on the podcast. I just kind of showed up and they said, "Hey, Daniel." And I just kind of went with it.
They never introduced you?
No, I got in on the sly, I guess. So mostly I've just done comments. The torture cinema and the new movies. And I did one interview with Sam Miller for Blackfish City, but it's awesome. I was very excited to get to do that. But with teaching and research, it's hard to always find the time to do everything that I'd like.
Oh, I hear you. And so for the SFT site, you have been contributing monthly.
Correct. And so, yeah, you easily talked me into not just writing the reviews for Skiffy and Fanny, but also I've long wanted to just do reviews of short fiction because I read a lot of that. And you spoke to me about doing specifically a little column on each month, the new short fiction in translation that gets published or I happen to read. And so I'm actually now about half a year behind in the various science fiction, fantasy, horror magazines. So I've taken to at least just reading the new translation once each month and slowly, slowly catching up on everything else.
Well, and, you know, I also knew that, like, if you had been like, well, I don't know, I would have said, you can't say no because there are like three max each month. Like, seriously, like, if it's three, it's like a gift. Although this month it was like four.
There were a few. Actually, the first month or the second month I did it, there were like 10 because there was like this abnormal kind of month where there were lots of, you know, smaller press specialty.
Was that the Latin American Lit Today?
Yeah.
Yeah, they had like five, yeah.
And so once I got started, it was easy to really get into them and such. But otherwise, yeah, it hasn't been that much of pressure or anything. And I hope people have appreciated it or enjoyed it.
Well, I know I have.
Well, thank you.
Okay, let's, for anybody who's been listening before, I'm going to stick with the same structure. So I'm going to talk about books and collections and then short stories. Daniel's going to take over that. And then we're going to talk about briefly the reviews and articles, future book. The Rachel's Corner will now be renamed Reader's Corner.
Oh.
So the books for September. September was very interesting because we had not a single novel, but four SFT anthologies, which is very interesting. So first, The Reincarnated Giant, an anthology of 21st century Chinese science fiction, edited by Mingwei Song and Theodore Huters from Columbia University Press. It is nearly 450 pages, and this is the second Chinese SF anthology. If you recall, Ken Liu's Invisible Planets anthology came out in 2016. A lot of it was stories published in Clark's World and Apex and Lightspeed. And this anthology has a very interesting intro entitled "Does Science Fiction Dream of a Chinese New Wave?" So, how witty. Very interested to read it because Chinese SF is really like on everybody's radar. It's divided into three sections and it has a gorgeous cover. So if you do nothing else, at least look at the cover and look at the and when I say you, I mean you listeners. I'm already telling Daniel to do too many things. So, okay, so then next up is something that I have been waiting for a year, a few years, the Apex Book of World SF 5, edited by Christina Girado, and Levi Tidar is the series editor still, and it's out from Apex Publications. It's the latest in a fantastic, wonderful, absolutely great series. And it includes SFT from Japan, Egypt, Bolivia, Korea, Spain, China, and Germany. And you'll know, you should know Christina as the editor of the very well-known Spanish science fiction magazine Supersonic. She's the international fiction editor at Apex Magazine. And she has a short story collection, Alphaland, that came out this year that I will be reviewing for Skiffy and Fanty, I swear. I just haven't had the chance to read that much, and I'm in the middle of Japanese space opera, and
there's so much. There's so much. Sounds like a great balance that they have in terms of content in this, which you'd expect from that series. But
did you have a chance to read any of the other volumes? Because I haven't read every single volume yet.
I have not read every one, but I lose track, honestly. But I believe I have read one of the previous ones.
Yeah, it's good. There's a lot that's written in English because the world speaks English. I understand that English is everywhere. But there's some really good stuff. Okay, the anthology that I do have, that I actually got two copies of, and that I've already read, written the review, you know. Science Fiction is, so it's a treasury of Israeli speculative literature, and it's edited by Sheldon Teitelbaum and Emmanuel Lottam, and it's out from Mandel Villar Press. I love Mandel Villar Press because they published a novel, Wicked Weeds, by Pedro Cabilla, who's from Dominican Republic, and that was translated by Jessica Powell, and it's a zombie novel, but it's not a zombie novel at all. It's one of my favorite books of all time. And then they also published a book from an Israeli author. It's called Israel, and it's a alternate history of what if Jews had set up their own Jewish state in New York instead of in Israel. So that's by Nava Semel and translated by Jessica Cohen. So, this press, it's small, it's relatively new, but they do some great stuff. Anyway, I read every single page of this collection. I love it, love it, love it. And I recommend it to anyone who loves great stories, diverse styles, and a comprehensive history of the genre in the context of Israeli culture. Gary Wolf gave it a very positive review in the September issue of Locus, and I did as well in World Lit Today, and yeah, that review's already out. Mine was shorter because World Lit Today reviews are short, but I loved all the stories. My favorites were the ones by Karen Landsman, Savion Liebrecht, Shimon Adaf, and Lavi Tidar. Lavi's was, of course, written in English. The other three were translated from Hebrew. And speaking of Karen Landsman, she has a new book in English coming out. It's a fantasy, and it's going to be coming out from Angry Robot in 2019, and it's called The Heart of the Circle. I'm very excited. And I would never have known about this next one except for Sean Gines-Vishniak, who is the editor of the SFRA Review and the book review editor of Foundation. So he does he does a lot of things. And so he's pretty connected, plugged into the SFT world. And he told me about an anthology of Korean science fiction out from Kaya Press called Ready Made Bodhisattva, I guess that's how you pronounce it. The Kaya Anthology of South Korean Science Fiction. And yeah, I really want to get my hands on this.
Yes, this one sounds interesting too.
Doesn't it?
Oh, yes.
And I mean, we've gotten a lot of Korean SFT from like Asymptote, Clark's World, Words Without Borders. When I say a lot, I mean like, you know, in relation to whenever I see anything that's not from China, Japan, Spain. But when I get like Korean, I'm like, oh, you know.
There have been a few drops really of it, but they've been really, really tantalizing drops.
Very, yes. And I was very interested that it says the anthology of South Korean science fiction, because I have, and I don't know if you've noticed this too, but like whenever people, especially people of Korean ancestry or people from Korea, they don't say North or South. They just say Korea. And I'm used to that. I'm used, you know, all the times that SFT, Korean SFT, they always say just Korean SFT. So if anybody, I don't know, if there's anything to know about that, feel free to email me, rachel@sfintranslation.com, because I'd love to know what the deal is.
Yeah, I'd just be interested in knowing if there's if there is science fiction coming out of North Korea at all, or is that something that gets banned?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I don't know. Maybe it's a political... Anyway, so those were four awesome anthologies. If I missed anything, if there are any novels or anything I missed, of course, I hope listeners will let me know. So now the short fiction. It is your turn, Daniel. Tell us all about September's short SFT.
Okay, so first up, we have The Foodie Federation's Dinosaur Farm by Wao Luangzhang, translated from the Chinese by Andy Dudak and published in this month's September's Clark's World. So the opening lines to this story, which in this issue, it's actually a special dinosaur-themed issue of Clark's World, immediately sets the stage for readers to the sort of universe and even the tone of what the story is going to be. And so a young worker at the 045 Meat Union factory on Continent 3 in Starship Rhea is fighting against a dinosaur uprising. So that's not the exact line, but that's the main points from it. And so in this story, a segment of a far future nomadic humanity has abandoned lab synthesized foods that all their compatriots have turned to and returned to farming, herding, and hunting for food that has been resurrected from the abandoned earth. And so they're not just sort of returning to roots, but I think, Rachel, you had mentioned, I saw a comment from you that it's almost a snooty kind of foodie kind of culture where we're going to be better than the rest of you and we're going to go back to what was natural and organic and such, where maybe there were benefits, but we're going to sort of make ourselves seem like we're doing something very noble here and important culturally. So that's basically the main idea of it. So dinosaurs are a particular delicacy of meat that this civilization or these people are raising on their starships. But the most coveted meat, and actually organs as well, come from a particularly intelligent species of dinosaur that is capable of speech, a lot of complex, intelligent thought, and therefore also revolt against the humans that are ranching them. So at first, I was wary of this story, I guess I would say. One, the length, I was worried it was going to go on too long for being something that was kind of absurd. I'm not really that into like dinosaurs and getting excited about them. Like, make a themed issue on bacteria and I'm there. But dinosaurs, like, everybody does dinosaurs. So I was slightly intrigued, but not really as excited as many other people have been over this issue. But it slowly started winning me over. And so, like, there are comedic aspects of it that at first, and the absurdity, it totally reminded me of an episode of Futurama. There's even a character that's mentioned that's basically just like Mom from the robot production company in Futurama. And I thought, well, this isn't going to be sustained for the length of this story if it's just kind of silly, absurd commentary. And I began to see, as they had conversations between the protagonists in the story, who I can't recall, but I'm not sure if the protagonist is actually directly named or not. But in any case, between the protagonist and a dragon who is named Steel Teeth, and the dragon actually also requests that he be referred to as a longer, more noble name as well, that becomes important to the story. But the conversations that these characters have really allow a lot of reflection on biology of predator-prey interactions, on complexities of food web, and when you're intelligent, what sort of implications the food web has to your consciousness or to your morality. There's lots of cultural sort of aspects to the story of when you form civilizations based on biology, which all civilization is to some extent based on biological needs. What does that mean? And what does that sort of entail for the directions your society might go? And it kind of embraces the absurdity of the story and then also relates it back to sort of the absurdity of our own nature as biological beings. And so as a biologist, I particularly then began to really love this story.
I love this story. I loved it so much. It was such a great, I don't know what foodie culture is like in China. I mean, I'm sure there's foodie culture.
I think anywhere where there is money and yes, different classes, you get the beauty culture.
It's like, it was such a great takedown of it, because that might not have been the point, but then again, it might have, like, who knows, but I sit there and, like, I've seen some of these shows, and they just make me cringe. I mean, I guess to each their own, but it just, it makes me think of, like, wow, how must this, like, feel for someone watching this who doesn't have even access to, like, basic good food, you know what I mean? Like, it's...
Right. And is eating just simply to survive and does with the bare necessities, basically. It gets taken to extremes, and the sort of basic connection between killing other life forms to consume it can sometimes get lost then in that romanticism, I guess.
Yeah, and this story really brings out the cruelty also of farming. I mean, they might as well be farming humans, because these dinosaurs are capable of thought and speech, and they're being raised. But the human that's interacting with Steel Teeth doesn't even know that they're being made to be super smart, precisely because it makes them tastier.
It's exactly. Like,
oh man, I don't know. This is great, and also this author Luo Longzhang. He had a story in Clark's World in May of 2016 called Away From Home, and that was translated by Nick Stember. I really like this one, but anyway.
And it's interesting because you're sort of like the main points you took from it. I picked up on those, but they weren't the strongest thing that I found in it. And I think that points to the fact that this story really does have lots of interpretations, and there's lots of stuff in it. There's a lot of meat on the bones, no pun intended.
Oh, but you did intend it.
I did, yeah.
You did.
I'm sorry. Okay, so next up is Children of the Endless Sea by Suvi Koppila, translated from the Finnish by the author, and found on Samovar. Very different style of story. I chose the words when I wrote up the review of this for the SFT site: beautiful, evocative, and sad tale. It's set in, at least as I interpreted, a seemingly future Earth, where civilization has fractured into lots of different human communities. Civilization as we know it seems to have been brought down by large-scale flooding that has removed most, if not all, of the solid ground of Earth and forced life to return to the sea, either in the sea or on ships or rafts in near constant contact with the ocean. And so the narrator of the story and her friend Shanra are from a population that lives on rafts, but then also partially in the sea. And so over the generations, they've begun evolving traits, adaptations to the new environment that they live in. And so they've begun to actually form scales on their skin and webbed hands that have been selected for. So as the narrator considers what the future and destiny hold for her life with her people and these changes that are coming to her people, forces from both the natural world in which they live in, from the ocean depths, and also from outside human societies that come into contact with them, start shaping her through events into something unique, but also very caught between two worlds, sort of paralleling the caught between two worlds of land and the sea. So the story fits, I thought, really well within self-contained kind of nature, but I really kind of fell in love with this universe that, or the world that was built here and the different peoples. So even if the characters weren't continued, I'd absolutely love to see something like this. And the overall feel of the story, featured in some kind of novel length work, really, I think it could really be expanded upon. It was powerful, I thought.
I agree. I really liked it. It reminded me also of, some other stories of watery worlds, like, you know, imagining these other worlds that I think would be a great anthology. And I'm sure it's been done, like, for English stories, but this one from the Finnish and one from one of my favorite authors, I think everyone knows, Clelia Ferris from Italy. And I'm trying to think there's another one. There's some really great Waterworld stories coming from very different, you know, Finland, Italy, you know, very different experiences of, Clelia is, she's from Sardinia, which is an island. So she has her own kind of perspective on it.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's aspects of mythology in here that I just don't know about and go beyond me. But even if you don't are similar to me in that regard, I think you'd enjoy this.
I agree. It was very, really, really beautiful. Samovar has a good track record with beautiful, long, lovely stories. So
I've enjoyed everything they've had so far, I think. So in that issue of Samovar, they actually have another story that's a reprint from a story that was published in last November's Apex magazine. So if you didn't happen to, or if you don't happen to read Apex regularly, you have a chance to catch the story now again. And at first, because I just glanced briefly, I thought the story was titled Untitled. But as I was typing it up and then typing it again, I realized, wait a tick, it's actually titled Untilted. So it's Untilted by K.A. Ternia, translated from the Russian by Alex Schwartzman. In this story, pain from the loss of a child, followed by also loss of a partner, leads a woman named Dahlia to contemplate suicide. But during this moment of contemplation of taking action, a seemingly random and surreal encounter with an older boy named Marcus prevents her from taking action due to the absurdity of what kind of how Marcus approaches her. And a reader begins to find out that Marcus can sense her trauma and has crafted a note to get her attention long enough for her to take a step back from despair. And he also has ability to help her shed the pain that she feels through a magical music box left by his grandmother. So it might sound kind of odd and convoluted and maybe even a little sappy, but actually I thought the story was, it's constructed incredibly well. Too, it's hard for me to summarize or without spoiling things, but also accurately summarize without making it sound hokier than it really is, because it's actually very well constructed and done as really, at least I felt, a meditation on the trials of pain, both the harm and the benefits that pain causes for people in their lives. And in contrast to the other story from Samovar, which had a lot of sadness in it, this one actually has a very warm message, I think, about the role that people can take in helping others get through trauma, and that helps you get through your own trauma, kind of going through that process of reaching out to other people. Another one I really enjoyed.
Yeah, it would have been very hard for me to summarize it, so I was impressed, not surprised, but impressed with your summary. Because yeah, I read it last year, and you know, and Alex also talks about how translating the story was a particularly fun challenge, because you know, this is Russian, and the author does lots of play on words.
Oh yes, yeah, misspellings, mm-hmm. And yeah,
and if you can imagine, I mean, I took Russian for a couple of years. And it's a fascinating language. The alphabet is actually strangely similar to English. I mean, there are a lot of letters that are the same, but then there are a lot of letters that look, the backwards N is actually an E, and the backwards R is ya. But Alex really did a really good job just kind of like capturing that. The author also had a story called Black Hole Heart in Apex a few months before this one was published in Apex. So, and Alex has also told me that, you know, he has some other stories by her. So yay, we can look forward to more.
Yeah. Looking forward to that.
Yeah. She's great. She's got a really good, good tone. I love the tone. So tell me about Haruki Murakami. Like, where has he been?
Sure. I still have not read any of his novels. I feel like I'm mostly going to be saying like, oh, I haven't read that yet or something. Because despite the huge amount that I do read, I just have tremendous holes remaining still.
Oh my God. Me too. All of us.
It's partially because I don't just read sci-fi fantasy. I read a lot of other genres and literature too. So anyway, so I caught this in the September 3rd issue of The New Yorker. It's a short story translation titled The Wind Cave by Haruki Murakami. And it's translated from the Japanese by Philip Gabriel. And so in this story, which just touches upon sort of sci-fi fantasy type themes, the narrator of the story recalls the death of his younger sister from a heart arrhythmia at the age of 12 when he was 15. And so he reflects on the effects that his sister's death had on her life and what hers might have been. And really, that's the key to the speculative element to the story. It seems that he took this idea from or came upon the story thinking about the implications or sort of like literary drawing on the possible existence of alternate universes and sort of the randomness of day-to-day unknowns that pull us into the reality that we actually experience away from these other possibilities potentially. And so the short story has a lot of allusions to the works of Lewis Carroll. The sister who died in the story, she particularly liked Lewis Carroll's work, so Alice in Wonderland. And so the story sort of segues to this recollection of a family trip to a wind cave near Mount Fuji that occurred 2 years prior to the sister's death. And while exploring, the boy's sister disappeared down a hole, so kind of like down the rabbit hole. And for a moment, he thought that she had gone to another, you know, universe and would not be returning. And so in this sort of memory, the narrator explores the fine lines between life, death, memory, possibility, and the concept that somebody lives on even beyond death. So it's one of those, you know, literary stories that does touch upon genre.
Yeah, Murakami, I get a sense that most of his stuff is like that, kind of surreal. Kind of moving between genres. I read the Wind Up Bird Chronicle and the, what was it called? The Strange Library or something. And both of them, the same thing. It's like a kind of dark magical realism, surrealism. You know, it's not, it's not like science fiction. It's speculative, yeah.
But it uses speculative kind of ideas as a jumping off point.
yeah. But yeah, weren't you the one? You told me about this story, and then I forgot about it. So.
Oh, that it was in existence?
I forgot it existed. Like, I pinned the tab on my computer, on my desktop. Totally forgot about it. So.
It's in the reviews now, so.
Yeah. When you sent me your review, I was like, oh, crap. I forgot about that one.
Speaking of reviews, how goes the world of reviews, mon ami?
They go well. There's always, it always filters through. So like, whatever I say now is, you know, there's probably like 10 more, you know, whatever. But so first, the writer behind the site, Tongues of Speculation. So this site does a lot of SFT reviews too. They're just not as like in your face, like in everybody's, you know,
we need converts
grill. Like, yeah, I mean, like, you know, like I am like, you know, being like, hey, but anyway, they write a lot of, I think it's a guy. He writes a lot of really great stuff. And so he and I both reviewed Tomohito Moriyama's novella, 2 of 6, A Captain's Dilemma, translated from the Japanese by J.D. Wisgo. And J.D. actually contacted me and told me about these, this and a couple other collections that he had translated from Japanese and, independently published. Really good quality, I have to say. I mean, translations, like, you have to really love the work to do it in the first place. And if you can't find a publisher, because it is very difficult to find a publisher, even for English, you know what I mean? So if you can't find a publisher and you do it yourself, like, you know, I talked about the last episode, I think, about the Hungarian novel, The Mission. Also, the translator contacted me, told me about it, independent. I think it's independently published. A very high quality, really great stuff that you wouldn't have gotten if they hadn't have done it themselves. You know what I
right.
mean? So,
but it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it really is. And, Two of Six is very interesting. It's a novella. It's short. It's a thought experiment. I reviewed it on my site, and, you can also read, Tongues of Speculation's review. Brian Kalishaw reviewed Vita Nostra by Sergei and Marina Diachenko, translated from Russian by Julia Maitov-Hersey. And you can find that review in Sequart magazine, whatever. My review of that extraordinary work of magical realism and psychological horror will be coming out in the journal Foundation. I don't know when, but it will be there.
I'm looking forward to reading that then, just based on how much you love that, I know. And as soon as I get money, that is one of the things that I'm going to get.
Get some money, buy Vita Nostra. It's just, it's amazing. And I mean, people have said that they've read it in the, people have read it in the original Russian, Julia herself, and some other people have said that it like changed their lives. And I can't even, there are no words. I don't even know how I wrote the review. I was like, how do I even put words to paper? It was just, it was an amazing, it's one of those experiences, not just the book, but an experience. So anyway, look for that. And you can also read this a Los Angeles Review of Books piece that seriously seemed to come out of nowhere. I was like,
ones
what?
Like that usually do, I think.
Yeah, I was like, Bodies of Summer. That came out in like 2016. I don't know. So it's by Martin Felipe Castañer. He's from Argentina. And it is an excellent short novel, like I said, Bodies of Summer, about a world in which people can upload their consciousness to the internet and then download it back into new bodies. And of course, it brings up all kinds of crazy ethical, legal, moral, philosophical problems. And it was, I think it was from, Dalkey Archive, I think, published it. And I reviewed it, 2 years ago? And it was crazy good. And also, Martin is, he's pretty visible on Twitter. So you can follow him. And he's great. So far, yes, and something I didn't write in my notes because it came out after I wrote my notes. Dale Knickerbocker, who you might know from Lingua Cosmica, which was that essay collection about world SF that came out several months ago from University of Illinois Press. He wrote a long, filled with praise review of the Catalan novel TypeScript of the Second Origin. I have not read that yet. Had you heard about that? Okay, it's a very, I don't know. It's like dystopia, so it's kind of like Yoko Tawada's The Emissary, which is also out now, about like some unexplained kind of disaster, or whatever. But it's some sort of thing where like only like younger people are alive, and they're trying to build up, you know, their cult, you know, civilization, whatever. Anyway, he wrote a a long review for that, also with the Los Angeles Review of Books. Yes. Okay, so that's the reviews that I know of. If you Daniel, or you listener, please let me know. I'm sure I missed some. Yeah, okay. And articles. Sometimes we have some articles, sometimes there are none, but this month there were two. I was pretty excited. The first is by Christina Jurado, about the Apex Book of World SF5. It's really interesting. It's right on the Apex website. Of course, everything we talk about on this podcast episode will be in the show notes, all the links, but she talks about her process of finding the best works of SF from around the world, balancing that with reflecting diversity in SF by including languages and regions that hadn't been represented in previous world SF. So, you know, in other world SF, you'll see stories from like Israel and certain countries in Africa. In this one, you see more from the Arab world. And different, you know, different regions. So she's really trying to kind of get a broad kind of, you know, reach, which I think is great, because that kind of, that contributes to the series, what it's trying to do, which is showcase the best of world SF on a continuous, you know, thing. Like it's not just one anthology here, one there, but like a really great series. And I remember
it's a continuous process.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, she's thinking about keeping all these things in mind at once. The previous, the editor of World SF4, Mavesh Murad, talks about this too. And I don't remember if it was in her podcast or if she wrote something about it. I'm going to have to go look. But anyway, you should read what Christina wrote, because it was, it's really interesting just to get that straight from the editor. Yeah. The other one was about Stanislaw Lem. He just keeps coming up, and for good reason. He was pretty brilliant. I was on a Lem kick for a while, but I've gotten derailed. Have you read much Lem? Any Lem yet?
I have not.
I have recommendations. Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I'm no expert, but Lem is pretty great, and there's a lot of new criticism, new like critical analyses coming out, talking about him and his stories in relation to the Holocaust, which was not discussed until very recently. Yes, he has a very interesting past, and how he made it through. He may have been sent to a camp, but and his family was Jewish, but he didn't, I don't think he went to a camp for very long, and he and his parents actually managed to like hide in Poland. I don't know, it's an interesting story, but there's a there are two new biographies of him in Polish, and a translator told me that she's trying to get it, trying to get a people interested to get it translated into English. I really hope that one of them or both of them can be. But anyway, the article is about Lem and his biographer, translator, and critical scholar, Peter Swirsky. And it's really interesting about how Swirsky first encountered Lem, and then when he met him, and their professional relationship. And then there's a little tidbit in there about how Swirsky translated something of Lem's. I'm not sure if it was like a collection or one of his novels. A lot of them have been translated already, but a lot of them by Michael Candle. But Swirsky translated something, and then something fell through, and like the Lem estate was like pulled the plug, and like the translation just wasn't, like, didn't go through, and it's like, dang it. Yes, so that made me really like, but anyway, everybody should go read that. It's let me see, the First News, it was on the First News website. I'm not sure what that website is, but anyway, so that was pretty cool. So future books, books coming up. So I took to Twitter, as I do sometimes when I want to whine. And I mean, look, everybody's whining. I might as well whine.
The solution to that is drink some
exactly.
wine.
Exactly. You whine, you drink wine, whatever. But yeah, I was just like, okay, like this has to be a joke because October is my birthday month. Yes.
It's your birthday.
I share the birthday with some really great translators who I know. Another girl named Rachel, actually. Same birthday, same name, same interests. I know. She's great. Rachel Hildebrandt. She is the woman behind Wayward Sisters Press, which is crime and noir fiction from Germany and Austria, in case you're interested. Rachel Hildebrandt. She's great. She also runs Global Literature and Libraries Initiative. So anyway, we also share a birthday with Roy Lichtenstein, Emily Post, Dylan Thomas, and Theodore Roosevelt. Not a big fan of his, but anyway. So of all the months, there's nothing. There was no novel length works of SFT, but then a translator contacted me about a novel that she translated from a French author coming out, and I don't have the title with me right now, but I will post about it. Yes,
stay tuned.
So okay. There is something, but nothing from a publisher.
Right. Well, I'm convinced too that particularly because I like literary fiction too a lot, I'm always looking for ones that just never get marketed as genre, but are, or at least, you know, have some significant proportion of it. And so I'm going to be on the lookout in the bookstore or the library or wherever to see if anything's out there that we just, because most of the news that at least I hear about, and I don't know about you, like from publishers, they're usually from publishers who specialize in, you know, genre.
Yeah, yeah. I spent many years reading the, you know, all the classic, you know, Penguin and Oxford and any classic I could possibly get, vintage and all that stuff. And but I never really got into like more recent literary fiction. And then just as I was starting to, then I started reading SF in translation, and this is basically what I read now. Like, I was reading history and biography. I don't even have time for that, so I can't. Yeah, I'm just focused. And you know what? It's been fabulous. But yeah, I do sometimes think I need to reread Crime and Punishment. You know, I just
mm-hmm. Oh God, I so want to reread that.
But to make up for October being like a wasteland, although I must say I can't. Oh, November's awesome, but I can't slam October too much because, of course, Clark's World does have another work of Chinese SFT, and there was already some reviews coming out of previous books, so it's, we'll see. So November's great. So we have coming up Icelandic, that's right, Icelandic speculative fiction, and I think it's pronounced Sjón. His book, Codex 1962, a trilogy translated from the Icelandic by Victoria Cribb, is supposed to be crazy amazing. So you are interested in, you're interested in this one.
I just happened, while browsing Barnes & Noble to just see what new titles there were just in general literature. I was going through the shelves and came across this, and I picked it up and I was doing work there in the cafe. And so I went onto your SFT site.
As
and
one does.
Found that it was exactly, did my research and found out that it's on your master list, but I hadn't seen you mention it. So I thought, ooh, this would be a good one to talk about. It's a single book, but it contains three parts to it. As far as I know, it wasn't, maybe it was published originally as a trilogy. I don't. Do you know? But in any case, it's not a really huge, long book. And so the first part is something that fits within the romance genre loosely. The second half has a crime mystery kind of genre vibe to it. And the third third set in the near future. And so that one has speculative elements to it. And so I completely didn't pick up onto this until I began looking into it after seeing it in the bookstore. But I had just read about this book and kind of filed it in my brain as best as I can file things in there to look up more information on, because I came across an article in the New York Times book review on it. And the author of that review, I don't have their name written down, but they called it an epic complete with unicorns, angels, and stamp collecting werewolves. Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm at that party. That's going to be lit. Between those two sources and then seeing you having mentioned it, and then passing on to me on Twitter that you had heard other kind of excitement about this. That's one of those that if I ever get money, that's near the top of the list of something to check out. Or if I can find it at the library is my other option.
Good luck with that, though. I don't know.
That's the one nice thing about being at the college is interlibrary loan. And even local libraries, they have interlibrary loan programs. And so I've often requested books through that when I knew I wanted to read it, but there was no way that I could put the money out at that moment in time.
Yeah, so. I don't know. That's a good point. I mean, you can always ask, you know, local libraries even to order. So yes, so Codex 1962, you guys need to check it out. Also in November is Vita Nostra. So I've already said my thing about it. I love it, love it, love it. Also, City of Ash and Red from Korea. Science Fiction, that's Fiktion from Germany. This is a collection by Franz Fermann. I have no idea who this guy is. I don't know much at all about this collection. All I saw was Germany. Oh my God, that's kind of rare. Unless your name is Andreas Eschbach or Wolfgang Jeschke. So I was very excited for this. Then there's one from Israel called Muck by Dror Burstein. And that sounds very interesting, kind of speculative. I don't remember what it's supposed to be about, but that was pretty interesting. And then from Slovenia, which you don't get much SFT from Slovenia, is something called In/Half. So these are some really, so let's recap. Okay. November, Iceland, Russia, Korea, Germany, Israel, and Slovenia. See, it's great. I love November.
And I'm sure there'll be other stuff too.
Yes, but there will definitely be more stuff.
And I was just thinking, October, I'm wondering if there'll be some horror stuff maybe timed out, particularly from small presses. I follow and know some people from small presses. I don't know how much, I need to talk to them, how much, you know, translation kind of stuff they have or ever consider even. But yeah, that's an interesting question because there's got to be horror out there too. But, and this is the month.
Yeah, well, exactly. And horror is not my forte at all. Like, I read Stephen King, and I mean, that's really the extent of my, I mean, horror is much, much, much bigger than him. But yes, so I need people telling me more about horror and translation. There may not be a lot, but...
But there is stuff that comes out. There's that book with the children vampires that was out a number of years ago, got turned into a movie. I'm blanking on the name of it now, from Scandinavia. Whatever country it was from. Is it Let Me In? Let the Right One In. Let the Right One
what?
In.
What? Wait a minute. Is that Alkvist? Was that the name?
Yes.
Huh. This is interesting.
And so, yeah, maybe there's a new one.
There might, yeah. He's written a couple of things that I'm supposed to read for Strange Horizons. So.
So it is. It is Sweden. Yeah. But there's within that sort of subgenre of Swedish translations, I think, and even more broadly, Scandinavian crime fiction and horror is something that I think frequently kind of is a thing.
Yeah. And the Dutch author, Thomas Olde, Hoyvelt? I'm not sure. His book, Hex, came out a couple years ago. And it's, yeah, it's supposed to be so horrifying that apparently it scared Stephen King. I don't know. That's what they say. Okay, so let us step into the Reader's Corner. So we're going to talk about what we're reading and or translating. And Daniel, you go first.
Right now, I've been starting over the end of summer break. I started reading Vestige on your recommendation in the original French, and I've been loving it, but it's slow going just because I have a hard enough time during the semester keeping up with short stories and everything in English. And reading it in the original French, I just have to go slower. But I mean, I'm eager to get through it just because I want to join this cheerleading that this gets publication of the English translation here, because it really is, just from the bit that I've read so far, just wonderful science fiction.
It is. It's really amazing.
And so that's where I'm at now.
And I see here that you are writing something yourself.
Yeah, I've piddled around in some short stories. I think I submitted, there's two that I've submitted. One was a very short, completely surreal kind of thing. And the other, like years ago, back when I was in grad school, I typed up a story that was way too long and not edited enough and sent it to the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction. But yeah, there's a handful of stories that I kind of work on now and then, and I've got really inspired by sort of a vague idea for a horror story. And so because it's the time of year now too, when I've had time to write, that's kind of what I've been focusing on.
Sweet. I am currently reading Legend of the Galactic Heroes, volume 7, and 7 is Tempest, yes. I am reading this fabulous book in the series. It's a 10-book series by Yoshiki Tanaka. Mm-hmm. And I've read all the previous ones, written a review about it, reviews about each one, and so it's pretty great, and I have many, many thoughts about it, and I can't wait to finish the series. Thankfully, Hikasoro is bringing out the whole series. And, it's just a fascinating, very far future space opera, but fascinating, historiography angle to it. But yes, I have many thoughts. So, that's what I'm reading. Then I'm going to move on to Alpha Land by Christina Jurado, because I owe Skiffy and Fanti a review and I love Christina. She's so great. So I want to read that. And then I have Alkvist books and Apex SF5. And I don't know when I'm going to get the time, but I'm going to do it. Translating. I'm translating some Clelia Ferris stories, that were collected, into one book, published by Francesco Verso's Future Fiction in Italy. And her stuff, I mean, people are going to get so tired of me saying it, but she is brilliant. Brilliant. And she's very, very highly acclaimed in Italy. Just not very well known here. And I really want to try to change that. So you can read her, one of her stories translated by the awesome Jennifer Dallaire, in Future Fiction anthology out from Rosarium, which came out last year. And I translated one of...
Great publisher.
Yeah, they're great. I translated one of her stories for Samovar, which also came out last year. And I'm currently translating some more of her stories, and I love her. She's so brilliant. And she's just great. And I work with her. I send her drafts. She sends me her comments. We go back and forth about, well, you know, is this what it means in English? Is this what you would say in Italian? She uses some Sardinian, which sometimes I encounter. So I'm like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that word. So I go look it up, and I'm like, Italian doesn't know that word either.
That word either.
And then I find out that...
And then you wonder, is it a made-up word for science fiction?
Well, yeah, but you know, Sardinian, I just found out today, Sardinian is not... It's not really related to Italian. It's a branch from, like, it's closer to Latin. Like, it's closer to its Latin roots than Italian. I'm like, well, there you go. Clearly, I already told her. She said, you know, some of these stories are going to be a little bit tricky, a little bit challenging, because some of them are, you know, have a lot of kind of Sardinian.
The look bar.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, I can do it. So it takes some research. Sometimes I'm researching for like half an hour on one word, but it's worth it because she's great. So.
So yeah, sounds like you're excited.
Oh, I'm really excited. She's so great. Do you have any other things to say? You kicked derriere on your first co-hosting.
You.
So.
Yeah, thank you. The only thing I had to say otherwise was thank you so much for letting me join you in this.
Oh, yeah, this is great. So, yes, now that I have my hooks in you, you will be...
I will join you again.
Yes, I mean...
I'd be honored.
If you you like go on vacation and like you can't do it, I guess...
Is that a Sardinian word? I have not heard that
vacation.
Word before.
Vacation. So, and listeners, you lovely listeners, please remember to send me any and all SFT-related news and links via Facebook, Twitter, or email. I do not do the Snapchat. I hear the young ones do the Snapchat. I do not.
You gotta come over.
I'm not doing it. The email is rachel@sfintranslation.com. Sorry, one more thing. I am looking for, I think I found a couple people, but I'm, you know, you can't have too much of a good thing. I'm looking for more people interested in writing for the site about manga or wuxia or zhansha or any of these other genres of Japanese or Chinese, you know, SFT, light novels, like anything like that. I'm just, it's a whole other world. I do not know this world. Manga is like taking over Barnes & Noble, and I want to know what it's about. Like, I know vaguely, but I want to know more. So look for some more manga-related stuff on the site, and I'm now going to stop talking, and we will see you next month. Say goodbye to our lovely listeners, Daniel.
Goodbye, lovely listeners.
Au revoir. Talk to you next month.
Au revoir.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you'd like to support us, you can find us at patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do so at our email at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com, on Twitter at skiffyandfanty, and on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro and outro music comes from Dimension by Creo. You can find out more about them at freemusicarchive.org.